Hello and welcome to episode the 230th of the internet's one and only podcast about comic books. That's right, you are listening to the luscious tones of the comics podcast. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, joined as always by my good friends and yours. Chad's here.
Actually, I'm Matthew McConaughey now.
Okay. Hi, Matthew.
I was in lots of neat movies. Okay. And I drove a Lincoln before I got paid to drive a Lincoln.
What was it like to be in Sahara? I really like that
I didn't
film.
See that one.
Oh, okay. I guess you lived
I was
it.
There because I'm Matthew McConaughey, but I don't remember. I was probably on drugs. He looks like someone that does drugs. I mean, I look like someone that does drugs. Matthew
okay.
McConaughey.
Hi, Matthew.
With tiny little alligator arms.
I'm really excited to see what you think of Batman this week, so great to have you here. All right.
All right. Alex is here.
I'm not Alex. I'm Chad Waller. I have a new book out, a short story collection, and you should buy it on Amazon. You know, you could buy the ebook, but let's be real. You want the hardcover. You want the words Chad and Waller. You want to be able to feel them, to run your fingers through them. Yeah. Ask me anything about writing. I can hit you with an answer.
Can you write me a new movie that's really cool and has sci-fi stuff but isn't Interstellar?
We're going to call it just Stellar because you're a great actor, Matthew.
Fuck yeah, I'm down. We'll get Woody Harrelson to be in it too.
Oh yeah, all right. He's kind of like you, but like a less hot version of you.
I should probably explain this bit is that my mom got a new car, so I got her old car, and she had a Lincoln, so now I have a Lincoln. And that's literally it. It's because he does the commercials. But I got a new car this week.
Yay!
Nice. Emily's here, too.
I bought a copy of Chad's book. It should be coming in today, I think. Maybe? I'm excited to find out.
Nice. Maybe you'll finally read it.
I wouldn't count on that. I love Chad, but I'm a bad friend.
That's okay.
Well, we are here for another episode of
What's Your
the
Name?
Comics Podcast. I said my name. I said my name at the beginning.
Yeah, but now I'm Alex, and I just joined the show. Hi, guys.
Oh, hey.
Hi, Alex. I miss you.
Thank you, Emily. I mean, anytime I get to do a podcast with Chad, Matthew McConaughey, Jean-Luc, and Emily, it's always a
pleasure. Did you
pronounce
his name Matthew McConaughey?
He did, but we're going to let it slide.
Oh, thanks, Matt.
I don't think we should do that.
I feel like Matt is the authority here.
Matty G!
Yeah, I suppose you would be.
I feel like this is my fault, but I don't want to apologize for it.
I don't know. I feel like the bit could have been good if we had some forewarning. But anyway, we're here to talk about comics in 25 to 27 minutes.
We'll get there.
So we have to fill the first half of the show with content. So tell me about the media you guys consumed this week.
Do you guys know about this Hades game?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You know about Hades?
Lots of good things.
Turns out this shit slaps, guys. Who could have known? Who could have guessed? I haven't played it, but I've been watching my wife play it. And boy, is that fun and enjoyable, because I get to zone out every time there's any sort of gameplay, but then I get to pay attention to the parts that are like a visual novel, which is a thing that I like.
Yay.
It's great. And the character designs are really good and
very good things.
The music is very good. So, all in all, enjoyable experience.
Yeah, Hades seems really cool. I've loved everything that Supergiant has done before Hades. But because of the nature of Steam, I refuse to buy games for more than $10.
I bought Hades for $20 on the Switch because it was 20% off.
Yep, I also saw that sale, but like I said, because of the nature of Steam sales, I don't buy games for more than $10. Which is not a good thing, but I feel like even for a game that I know I will probably really like, saving $15 to $20 is worth waiting a year.
See, I'm kind of the opposite, where if there's a game that's cheaper on Steam, but I can also play it on Switch, I'm like, oh yes, I'll pay the Switch tax. Num 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 num. Let me play this game that I bought.
Well,
like,
they're the same.
Like Stardew Valley.
Price.
Oh, what do you mean? Oh, if like, they're the same price? Yeah, yeah.
They're the same price on Switch and Steam, and the sale that they did for like the Steam Summer Sale and the recent Switch sale was also like the exact same sale.
Oh, so okay, then you can just get the game. But I guess you could also just wait, because, yeah, I mean, it's like so many games come out, and this is like a conversation I was having this week with someone, but it's like people don't really finish games generally.
Because, I do.
Well, other than Jean-Luc, who plays the same games over and over again, and you can watch him do it. It's like, there's just so many AAA releases normally, and I guess it's less this year, but it's like, oh, like I just played Assassin's Creed. Now I'm going to play Call of Duty. Now I'm going to play Cyberpunk. And it's like, there's no way you're finishing all these games, because you're literally tweeting about buying a new game every week. So, I don't know. Don't buy games.
I don't know
why
you need to do that when you have VR chat.
Honestly, I've been thinking about that, and that's why I've been like looking at the Oculus Quest 2 website, you know, pretty often, checking for sales. But
Alex, you should join us in VR chat. Apparently, everybody found a really good laser tag thing, but you need a couple people for it to really work.
That's
and so
fun.
We're gonna try that tomorrow with four of us and play laser tag.
Yeah, it sounds lovely, and I think I'm gonna pick one up on Boxing Day if there's any sales VR headsets. But we'll.
I got a really cool Xenomorph avatar, so I don't have to be totally embarrassing.
Nice. Aww, you're no
but
longer
I also
a husband.
I got a really cool mermaid avatar with big tits in
there
case
we
I want to be really embarrassing.
Well, it's good. You know, like, you know, you wake up in the morning and you have a choice. That's good. You can
last time we played, we fed ducks. That was a lot of fun.
Aw, I love that.
That was literally like the whole area. It's just these cute little ducks walking around. You could give them bread.
It just seems like the perfect way to be like, hey, either your friends live far away from you or it's like COVID and you can't see them. And like, I don't know, let's figure out what we can do in VR. Let's go play like bowling or whatever or feed ducks.
It was my brother was telling a story, him and Cameron, because I had left and they went to like basically a comedy club area. People were going up and doing stuff. And so they get in and someone's playing a real guitar. And Joel's like, holy shit, I know that song. He starts singing this Alan Stone song and does a really good job. And he's like, wow, this is great. Like, there's talented people here. And then this lady goes up to do a stand-up routine and it bombs so hard and then just starts doing racist jokes
to
get people's attention.
Welcome to VR chat.
And it's like, yeah.
Sounds like VR chat.
Really good stuff or really horrible stuff. It is definitely usually not in the middle.
Chad, what do you think about Yashahime?
It's pretty good. It still feels like... It's like the most anime as far as like shonen shit goes.
I mean, yeah, like it's got a target audience and it is honing right in on that target audience. But like, you know, I don't think it's bad, even if it's like kind of normie shit, like anime normie shit.
Yeah, it's very paint by numbers in terms of like tone and when it'll do jokes and what kind of jokes it's gonna do.
I like the characters. I think it's kind of going in like a... I'm interested to see where it's going. Like
slowly but surely, it is moving in a direction.
Yeah, it is moving in a direction. The pacing could probably use some work. But I mean, like, that's kind of all anime, TBH.
Yeah.
Like, I'm having fun.
It really feels like Inuyasha, which I like. I wish it would stop teasing some of the bullshit. Like, either bring the characters back or just confirm that they're all dead. I don't... At this point, it doesn't matter.
But you gotta, like, keep people in suspense, Chad, even if it's,
like,
not
I don't like that the new
good.
Raccoon dog is, like, Hachi's kid or whatever. Like, it just feels... It makes things feel so small when it ties together that way.
Everything's everybody's children. It's like Star Wars. Like,
I was
they're afraid
say, like the...
to let go of the past for fear of alienating the future. And it sucks. But, you know, like, I am enjoying this more than the decline of Star Wars. So, you know...
You know, everyone's like, yeah, these the Rise of Skywalker is the worst Star Wars, and it's like, no, Rogue One came out.
Yeah, Rise of Skywalker is only the second worst Star Wars.
And then I go online, and people are like, here's why The Mandalorian and Rogue One are the best things Star Wars has ever done.
Hmm.
And it's like, I hate Star Wars fans. I think they're all miserable people, except you, Jean-Luc. Actually, no, I you're kind of miserable.
Wait, John's miserable
you
for different reasons.
You started watching The Mandalorian, right, Chad?
Yeah, I'm four episodes in.
How is it?
The first three episodes are really fun. I really liked them. The first episode kind of has some of that like setup blues or a little awkward in parts, but on the whole, enjoyable. I like the... even like the nods to stuff are fun. Like, oh, hey, there's an IG droid. Like, that's cool to me. I know what that is enough to be appreciated being in here. So some of the referential stuff I don't mind. I'm probably missing more than there is. And so it doesn't feel like it's like bombarding me with it because I am a very casual Star Wars fan. Episode 4 was really kind of corny as far as the plot goes, where it's like, oh, we're on this island, we got a planet, we got to teach these people how to defend themselves against the bad guys. And it's like, yeah, Firefly did this better, like, many years ago.
Yeah.
I don't, like, entirely liked how they showcased the Imperial Walker, the AT-ST. Like, it felt like too much like a robot, like, with a personality instead of just something someone was clearly driving. And then they're like, oh, look how devastating those are. It's like, I don't know, Ewoks, like, killed them with sticks.
Maybe you should get some sticks. Like,
yeah, like, it felt a little, like, weird as far as how it's been portrayed before. But on the whole, like, it was fine.
I think episode
Baby Yoda's
4...
cute as fuck.
Oh, yeah. I think episode 4 is the Bryce Dallas Howard directed episode, if I remember correctly.
Chad, his name is Grogu. Please stop referring to him as Baby Yoda.
So here's my problem with that, and it's not that Grogu's a dumb name. It's that 4 episodes in, and you'd think Mando would just been like, I'm going to call you something instead of the kid. Like, I'm going to give you some kind of name.
Yeah, like Matthew McConaughey.
He calls him, like, he refers to him as a Womp Rat at one point, and I wish he would just affectionately keep calling him Womp Rat for like, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And people are like, that's kind of mean. Aren't those, like, pests you shoot? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah,
fits though, don't it?
Luke Skywalker was beaming womp rats in his youth. He's just he's an animal torturer, and now he's a hero. So I don't know.
So I don't like that they spent literally till like mid season 2 be like, oh, his name is, and it's like, what?
Like
you don't do that.
Is it a big reveal where it's like his name's Grogu, and it's like, oh, but why? What's the? I don't know. But then again, I'm only on episode 2 of. I think there's like six episodes in season 2 already. I've just finished.
I'm not sure.
But I read a tweet, and I think it was from a friend of mine. I don't know. It could have been a random internet person. But they said that episode 6 of The Mandalorian is better than all of Star Wars put together. And I was like, what? But
I read that once,
yeah,
too, and
so
it's like, hmm.
They said that because Boba Fett comes back in it. Like, people are freaking out. They're like, I love The Mandalorian. It's so good. Wow, they made Boba Fett into a badass. And it's like, it's just so on its face, like, you dipshits are falling for them selling you toys. There's, like, nothing about the episode that is interesting or good, except for the fact that Boba Fett is in it.
That's enough.
Like,
see, I'm curious to see where my opinion is going to go on this, because it's been colored a lot, right? Because a lot of people have opinions on this show, and I've read a decent amount, and I know some of the plot. So it's not like certain things will surprise me. But I did really like the first 3 episodes. And it's like, oh, this is really good. And then episode 4 was like, okay, this is a step back in writing and quality. I appreciate kind of what they're trying to do, but it's clumsy. And it's very tropey. I hope it gets better again, but I also know that you definitely don't think it does, Jean-Luc. But I also know plenty of other people who think it does.
Well, to be
and
fair,
so it's going to be interesting where I land.
To be fair, the next episode is the worst, maybe one of the worst episodes of television I've ever watched.
Is that the prison one?
Yeah.
That's
episode 5.
Is it bad because it's poorly structured or because you don't like
acting.
How it treats prison politics?
It's honestly the acting is terrible. And I think is Bill Burr in it? I think
it's an episode like that looks like, you know how people are like, yeah, The Mandalorian has like a cinematic budget. You wouldn't fucking believe it based on that episode. That episode looks like a Sci-Fi Channel original. And not like a good one like Battlestar Galactica, but like bottom of the barrel Sci-Fi Channel original.
Yeah, and like every actor is terrible. And they introduce like a couple of aliens, and they're just like so bad at acting, and it's like so over the top, and like, yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if
I like the space girl that showed up in episode 4. I feel like they really wanted me to.
Oh, the actor the most interesting thing about her is that the actress who plays her is into QAnon.
Yeah, I know she's got like bad politics or whatever. I don't actually care.
Well, no, I only say that because the character is incredibly boring. And the only compelling thing to say about her is, wow, the actor's into QAnon. Like, that's...
It's one of those... She feels very manufactured, right? Like the level of badass, how she portrays herself, how she talks, her past, like... I feel like if I were 20 years younger and, like, you know, in the market for more Star Wars toys, I would want that one. But as an adult, I just kind of, it's like, you could do better than this. I know you've done better than this as a franchise.
Yeah. And I mean, okay, she does sort of factor in the first season, but I haven't seen her yet in the second season.
No,
she's again,
she comes back in the second season.
She comes back in the second season? All right, well. Yeah. She might die, though, Chad, so who knows? She might die in the first season. No spoilers, no spoilers. Ah.
It's weird, too, because, like, she does, like, Mando's got a helmet on the whole time, but I feel like he's got a bit of charisma to him, and she really didn't.
Yeah.
Well,
she's just kind of flat.
I think I said this last week, but when I was talking about The Mandalorian, but really, like, it feels like they wrote every character like they wrote The Mandalorian, which is, like, they wrote them all as if they were wearing helmets all the time. And so, like, a lot of the actor, like, the actors who don't have helmets on, just their dialogue feels really stilted, and they don't have charisma. Now, there is one character who gets introduced later on who has a ton of charisma, and I'm always in for, like, I guess there are, like, things that I like about it, but on the whole, it's just incredibly hollow. And I think people, I said this last week, but, like, I genuinely think that the reason people are so into it is really just that, like, it looks cool. And
it, well, it's the same thing with Rogue One, right? Like,
yeah.
It looks
no,
cool,
it's,
and then it's like references
same, yeah.
the stuff they liked
yeah.
when they were kids.
Yep.
Which is fine. Like, I do like what I've seen. I know I'm being a little hard on it because of this show, but, like, I've enjoyed it. My parents have enjoyed it. We're all watching it together. We're doing, like, an episode a night. Like,
yeah.
It's become a really fun just family thing to do because we're done with Rick and Morty. Also, going from Rick and Morty to this is a huge whiplash.
Jeez. Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, every time someone dies in Rick and Morty, the walls get covered in alien blood. And in this, there's no blood at all and no one is swearing and it's weird.
The thing that really drives The Mandalorian is the visuals, and it's like, it's in the Star Wars world and everything, but I feel it has more going for it than Rogue One, at least. That's not saying much, and, man, I've just seen so many tweets in the last 2 weeks about the hallway scene in Rogue One, and I don't even know why. I don't know, people just like putting it, and it's like, yeah, that was a cool scene, but the rest of the movie was kind of hollow and stuff.
I just wish people would, like, just watch the fucking Clone Wars, dude. Like, stop, like, hurting yourself watching bad Star Wars content and tricking yourself into thinking it's good, because
I don't know,
like, good Star Wars stuff.
I feel like
there,
The Mandalorian, like, is a fun surface level show where it's like, okay, like, you're in Star Wars and you're getting these references and stuff, and
yeah.
it's like, it's
the Clone Wars has that as well. It just
yeah,
also has,
but you,
like,
can also watch both. I don't know, like.
You can, but
I do feel like I could probably write better Star Wars than a lot of people at this point. Like, I've seen enough of it,
yeah,
and I've seen enough bad stuff where it's like, I can clearly do better than that.
Yeah,
I would still prefer
true.
To write for DC, so DC, you know, call me.
I mean, I think to a degree, like, a lot of the reason for this is, like, less on the individual writers and directors and more, like, on, like, a studio mandate. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah,
from,
yeah,
from
for
studio
sure.
mandate. Like, I think the reason that, like, The Mandalorian is so boring is because it can't have any teeth. It can't, like, be about anything.
It can't disrupt anything too much because
yeah.
then they have to deal with that.
Right.
So yeah. it has to fall within certain parameters that the studio execs have set.
Yep.
Yeah. Which
and
is, has to which is funny.
Focus testing.
It's funny considering, like, you know, Rise of Skywalker and sort of the crazy ways that they went with, like, the canon and stuff, and then they're like, no, but we can't really change anything. We can't do it. No, we're gonna.
Someone asked, he's like, how would you fix Rise of Skywalker? And a lot of people were, like, posting these huge rewrites of the script, and I was like, I think the ending fight needed mechs. I think that would have improved it.
Honestly,
a lot.
Lean into it. Yeah, okay.
That movie was dumb as shit, and I knew going in it was gonna be dumb as shit, so I really had fun with it. And it's like, no, we could make this dumber because I don't respect the sanctity of Star Wars.
I mean, I think if you just wanted to make a dumb sci-fi film, that would be more entertaining than The Rise of Skywalker, which often feels like a slog. Like,
yeah. I wish there were more dumb sci-fi films, but I know they're so expensive to make.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're never going to get, like...
Well, that's why Star Wars is, like, such a great IP to, like, make a dumb sci-fi film in, because if you just slap Star Wars on anything, it's going to make money.
I want Fast and the Furious, but Pod Racers so bad.
Oh, I want a Pod Racing film. Okay.
I want Vin Diesel to drive a Pod Racer.
Or like a Pod
Please
Racing TV
Disney.
Show where it's like, I don't know, it's like in the inner bowels of the pod racing world, and it's just like, yay.
I want race. Vin Diesel to play Riddick driving a pod racer.
Wow, the crossover we all
sure,
want.
Sure, why not?
The Chronicles
those,
of Star
those
Wars.
Those can fit together.
Does,
it's
does
dumb
Disney,
space
does
bullshit.
Disney own that yet?
Probably. I mean, let's be real. I would think so. And if not, it's not going to cost a lot to get the Chronicles of Riddick. I don't think.
Yeah, but. Probably.
Man,
not.
That was one of my favorite movies in high school, and I haven't seen it in like 15 years.
The first one holds up, I would say. I haven't.
The first one's good. That one I know holds up. I've rewatched that when Pitch Black came out, because it was basically a remake.
Yeah.
Or not Pitch Black, the Riddick, which is his name.
Riddick is owned by Universal.
Damn.
Darn it. Okay, so we need a Riddick Harry Potter crossover.
Yeah. Can we get Godzilla?
You can kill J.K. Rowling for
King
being
Kong,
a turf.
Or is that Warner Brothers?
King Kong is Warner Brothers, yeah.
Oh. Have you guys heard about the Warner Brothers putting all their films on HBO Max?
Yeah, I did. It's all year? It's kind of poggers because I will just be able to pirate like every current film in like 1080p the
and
day
theaters
it comes
are
out.
Just fucked.
Theaters are fucked.
It's kind
well,
of poggers because no, so, I'll probably get HBO Max
no,
even
more so than
you.
Like no, I mean,
but here's the thing, like yeah, theaters are fucked, and that part of it sucks a lot. But like, there's more to like movie theaters than Warner Brothers and Disney movies. And I think the way more insidious thing about this is that the reality is that like theaters probably aren't going to go away. It's just that like they won't be able to maintain operating costs, and the studios will just start buying them, and there will be the Disney theater and the Warner Brothers theater,
well,
right, like that kind of
thing,
which
thing
is
that,
even
like,
worse than theaters going away
yeah
entirely.
And there was that mandate, and like with a lot of Disney movies, like The Rise of Skywalker had to be played in theaters for this long and
like
take up this many theaters. Like that
so
happens
yeah.
a lot, right?
That happens with literally every Disney film. I'm
yeah,
sure.
yeah. And so with like, I mean, with the Warner Brothers move, I think that I was reading an article that it means that like it's going to theaters, and the agreement for theaters is better, so they get a bigger slice of the pie as a result. But it's like people aren't going to go to theaters right now. But it wouldn't be so. I mean, I don't know. Can theaters exist as sort of like a indie sort of marketplace thing, and then have streaming for big movies, and like maybe do like classic movies, like you do your Rocky Horror Picture
well,
stuff,
no, I
and
mean,
you do
people, like,
you think like that.
The indie theaters, like yeah, like those exist now. I mean, I'm sure
like Alamo Drafthouse and stuff.
I'm sure the margins on them are like really tight, but what's more likely is like you have indie theaters who like continue to exist. I mean, COVID obviously throws a wrench into it, but then what ends up happening is like the mainstream theater, like basically, like production companies end up owning both the IP and the distribution channels, which they're already trying to do with streaming, but they even more so by buying out theaters. And I think that like indie theaters can still exist in that world, but it's obviously a significantly worse world. I don't want movie theaters to go away. I think it would be like, it will be incredibly sad to me if like I can if I'm not able to go to movie theater, even like an if I'm not able to go to like an AMC or whatever again. I don't have or a Regal. I don't have a specific like tie to a brand or anything. But it will be sad if I can't go to a multiplex.
Well,
but like it is just like huge for piracy. Like it's like it is like I don't watch as many movies at home. That's the thing. Like that's the really sad part about it is like. I enjoy watching movies because I enjoy the experience of going to a movie theater and watching a movie in that context. Like sitting on my couch and watching it at home, even on a nice TV, is like not even close to the same. But yeah, it's nice to be able to be like, yeah, as soon as they start doing day and date streaming, like I'd never have to pay for a movie again. Like that is nice, I guess.
I like not having to go to the theater to watch John Wick and then having like the stoned guy talk to his girlfriend, be like, "What's going on? I don't understand." For the whole movie,
there's no story. Well, there kind of is, but you know, he's killing guys.
John Wick 3 has a pretty, I don't know.
I think this was John Wick 2.
Both of those movies, I think, have like plot lines and world building that is like important to follow.
They do.
How come the people that talk in theaters are either kids or way bigger than me and would beat me up if I told them to shut up?
Shut up, man. Point, Chad. No, but like at the same time, yes, that there is more. There's story stuff to enjoy in John Wick, but like also you could just watch all the killing and all the action. It's like, yeah,
I should watch John Wick. No,
that's good.
I actually own those movies. They're great.
Yeah.
Emily, how are you? We haven't heard from you in a bit.
On the subject of movies, I don't think theaters are gonna go away. I think that John has a point that even if movies are available on streaming services that we have, like, on our televisions, that doesn't mean we're gonna actually watch the movies when they come out. And, like, I think that this is a good move right now for Warner Brothers to put their films on HBO Max, because at least they're, like, getting put out and they're not just being delayed until, like, the next year when theaters can possibly be open. Like, people shouldn't be going to theaters, and I think it's responsible of Warner Media to give people another option, even if, like, most people probably aren't even going to watch them. Like, they're probably going to go up, and, like, half of the people that would watch them in a theater would actually end up watching them. Like, most people watch reruns of things they've already seen on streaming. Like, people are watching The Office. They're not, like, tuning in to the Snyder Cut.
I don't know. I think lots of people will tune into the Snyder Cut.
I'm
trying to grab for something that wasn't Wonder Woman, because I wanted to use another example of a thing that Warner's putting on streaming.
Yeah, I think it will sort of depend. It'll vary movie to movie. Like, I think something like Wonder Woman probably, like, will still get a lot of viewer, like, a big audience. Something like, I don't know, Kong versus Godzilla, probably fewer people will be interested in watching that on their laptop than, or on their phone, than they would be in a theater. So,
I don't think theaters are going to go away. I think people who think theaters are going to go away are I don't know.
I mean, I don't want them to go away, but I also like not ever needing to go to one again.
Before COVID, but I like having the option. I like going to theaters, and I think a lot of people like going to theaters, and that's why they're going to stay around. Like, you see, like, I know that it's, a lot of it is just film Twitter, but, like, you see a lot of people missing the fact that they, like, could go out to another location and sit somewhere and watch something in the dark and drink overpriced soda and eat overpriced concessions.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, you could do all those things. All right, Alex, I have to apologize to you.
That's okay.
Well, thanks for accepting my apology preeminently.
I already know. It's Tom Taylor related.
Yeah, we talked about it already, but you spoiled it now.
Okay, I'll take it back. Well, you can edit this.
Yeah, I'll cut it. I'll just cut it. I'm too fucking lazy.
No, you don't need to. Well, I mean, like, the reveal is happening in 10 seconds anyway. People don't even know who Tom Taylor is, so go ahead.
Fair.
Is that Tom King's son?
Yes. He's twice the man.
Yeah, he's definitely twice the writer, at the very least. So some people will remember that it was either, like, late last year or early this year. I don't really remember when. I think it was, like, January, February of this year. Alex told us that the new Suicide Squad run was, like, good and we should read it. And I think I was the only one who actually listened to him and read it, and I didn't like it. But after reading the first two issues, and then I never read it again. But Alex also told me that I should put it on the list of comics that we should discuss at for the end of the year show. And so I was like, well, I guess I should probably read it so I have a more informed take, and it's only 11 issues. And if I don't like it after 4 or 5, I can just stop reading it. It's not a big deal. So I read it, and that book's actually really fucking good, which is shocking. I think part of it is just that it reads better, like, when you have, like, specifically the first, like, 3 or 4 issues, when you can just read them all in a row, because, like, my hesitation about the first couple issues was that, like, basically they were filled with twists, and, like, the direction that it seemed like the book had settled on was not a very compelling direction, because it opens on, like, these super-powered freedom fighters, basically, and they basically get, like, captured and rolled into the Suicide Squad, and I'm like, and the second issue is, like, very sort of, like, straight-laced, like, yeah, they're in the Suicide Squad now, And it just seemed like a very, like, sort of normal Suicide Squad comic. And then I didn't read issue three, and in issue three there's another twist that is actually really good and makes the book really compelling. And I'm bummed. It's over. It only ended up running for 11 issues. Although that sort of seems like, it seems like that is like by intent, and like there's a sort of like a, probably a sequel series of some kind coming. But I had a really good time with it. I think Tom Taylor like is a really good character writer. And so there are obviously like imperfections and things I didn't like there are moments that I didn't love, or like quirks with the writing that I didn't always love. Like, it does the thing that like superhero comics always do, where it, like, every issue it has to find like a couple panels worth of space to re-explain to you who all the characters are and what their powers are. But I actually ended up, like, by the end, like, I really liked the new characters. I think it has like a really, really compelling arc for Deadshot that at first sets it up as being like, yeah, it's the same arc for Deadshot you've always seen. He's sad and he misses his daughter, and then he gets angry because he misses his daughter. But there were actually some like really emotional highs with his character arc in particular that I thought were really well executed. And I think that like the things that it sets up and the characters that it works with, like in that, like the like freedom fighter characters it introduces early on, end up being like really, really compelling protagonists that I would love to see more of, especially like outside the context of the Suicide Squad. Although you kind of get that here, but it, I don't know. I felt like bringing it up because I actually was really impressed by it and thought it was really good.
Heck yeah.
And I figured
I forgot, like, it's freaking December. We have to start thinking about end of year shit, and I don't want to.
I have a list. Work. I have a list already.
Sweet.
Good.
Yeah. So, and
you probably won't need to do a lot of work, because I think I've got just about everything.
Yeah, and it's also much shorter than previous years.
Well, it's definitely fair, like, shorter.
I feel
like,
bad we haven't read like any Dark Horse books at all this year.
Sorry, Black Hammer.
Yeah, I also feel bad about that. It like not reading Dark Horse books, but also like it's obviously like a weird year because of COVID, and so like there was like a whole block of time where books weren't coming out, and that resulted, and like DC canceled a third of their books. It's just been a weird year in general that I think like the number of comics on the list is like, or series on the list is lower than it has been in previous years. But I don't think that's like necessarily indicative that like quality has gone down. I think like the quality, like there are, like when I look at the list, I'm like, yeah, there are some things on here that I'm actually really passionate about that I really loved this year. So like, I think that like the quality of comics is like not, I mean, stagnant sounds more negative than I mean it to be.
it's consistent.
But it's consistent. Yeah. Like, it's just that there were like naturally fewer things that came out this year.
I still think we have like a strong like 15 books that are going to be turned into a strong 10 books, or
yeah,
maybe,
I think,
for sure.
Maybe even
yeah,
20 into 10 or something like that. Like, I think there'll be some discussions and stuff.
I think that there's definitely room to like have the kind of like end of year show we've had the last few years. Because like there's enough books on here that I'm like, yeah, like Alex said, there's like some books on here that are going to be hard to cut. Like, Chad will get mad when I tell him that Kill Lock is probably not on my top 10.
I was thinking of that right away, and I was like, man, Kill Lock is easily in my top 10, probably top 3.
Kill Lock is so good, and then the ending's like okay, and it's like. I'll have to reread it because I've only read it once.
It's kind of fun. The ending's really fucking dark.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. And also, I don't know if Jean was talking about this on the show or in Discord a couple of weeks ago, but we can also do like a look back at our like favorite book club books or whatever, and sort of get a list of that as well.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is like if you combined like the book club books with the like top 10 shortlist or whatever, like it's probably gets closer to being the same amount of books. It's not like
we should do a separate like ranking of all the book club books. Everybody can like put them in their own order from like most favorite to least favorite.
And then we'll come together to make a big list. Heck yeah.
The music's, my top 10 albums is going to be interesting this year because I might include EPs, and that means making cuts.
Yeah.
Damn, imagine making cuts.
I can't. I'm thankful. I don't think I've seen 10 movies this year. New movies. Maybe I have.
Any movies this year.
I was like looking at my Letterboxd list for this year, and it's really pathetic relative to the last few years.
Aww.
Like, I look at my top 10, and it's like, man, in a normal year, like, 4 of these would be top 10 movies.
Oof.
If that. So, you know, I'll watch some other stuff between now and the end of the year.
Yeah.
But, you know, my top album of the year is the 100 Gex Christmas song. It's not really an album, but it's a banger.
So. We'll allow it because you host. Get in there.
Did an issue of Snot Girl come out this year?
Yeah, it's on the list.
Yeah, it's
okay.
There.
Okay,
we talked about it. It came out right before COVID. It's the wedding issue.
Yeah. Yes!
Honestly, no
yes.
issues of Snot Girl come out, and I'll still probably put it on the top 10.
It's number 10. Like, it's whatever.
Yeah,
just because.
It still goes in the top 10.
Yeah,
so
not one issue.
Snot Girl puts
Girl.
Out one issue, and it's better than, like,
I remember
80%
that one
of the comics
so
that came
well,
out
though.
This year.
Which, yeah, and it's, like, with so many comics that come out, like, I don't remember everything that happened in, like, Kill Lock, although I really liked it, like, other books, but Snot Girl's had one issue this year, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I, like, remember the beats of that wedding issue.
Yes. I very clearly have the image of Caroline in the white suit in my head.
That doesn't surprise
for
me.
For personal reasons.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems pretty on brand.
Personal reasons.
Checkmark.
But yeah,
that's what we can look forward to for the end of the
what
year.
What came out that was better than Kill Lock?
Have you read Batman Catwoman?
Well, we're going to have an entire show about that.
Damn.
Fuckers.
What a tease. Chad, you got to listen to the show. You got to subscribe to our Patreon.
I mean, obviously Gideon Falls and Ascender were better than Kill Lock. I'll give him that. But then I'm trying to think of what else I read this year. Oh, Coffin Bound is actually really good.
I like Jimmy Olsen.
So there's 5. I got a top 5 off the top of my head.
To be fair, you are forgetting a Jeff Lemire book, so I'm
pretty sure
you
can come.
Oh,
yeah,
the tree one.
I feel like Family Tree was my least favorite Jeff Lemire book of the year, but it's probably still in my top 10, which is like, okay, that's nice.
Yeah.
It's my least favorite of the 3 Jeff Lemire books that came out this year, which means it's number 3 on my top 10 list.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that what's it, Strange Adventures, that great book, Tom King, Mitch Gerards, and Evan Doc Shader. Definitely.
Yeah, except the only, like, I read 2 issues and stopped, and I think you did something similar. No, you caught up on it, right?
I read 5, and it was like, wow, this is exactly what they're really doing the thing where it's like, at the end, the big reveal is going to be, it's bad to, you know, treat people whose countries you invade as savages and stuff like that.
Cool.
I don't know.
Thanks, Tom.
I read all of Pretty Violent.
Yeah, that's not on the short list, Chad.
All right.
It probably shouldn't
that
be.
That sounds like, I mean, more an admission of guilt than, like, a point of pride.
Hey, whatever fucking happened to Dead Eyes?
I love Dead Eyes. I don't think it came back.
No, that all came out last year. We literally put it on our list last
Wait,
year.
Is it done?
Yes, it was like 4 issues.
Oh, well, then I loved
it. It was on my list last year, but I was like, oh, it's 3 out of 3 fantastic issues. I was like, so did we finish it?
Oh, no. So, we did. The first issue came out in January. The last issue came out in
January. Wonder Woman, Dead Earth.
Oh, okay. I don't remember how that ended.
It ended pretty well.
I'm pretty sure it was in our, like, top 5, so it's pretty good.
Shit, I can't include Die. I included that last year.
You guys should read Wonder Woman, Dead Earth. It's good.
I have that on my... My catch-up list.
I can't include.
I have
Coffin
a question.
Yeah,
Coffin Bound is a different series this year, sort of.
Yeah,
ooh, yeah, we can.
I have a question, lads.
Yeah, what's your question? No, you can't put manga on the list.
Damn.
Is that Texas Blood over?
No, at the end, if
Emily, I think you would find that if you read the essay at the end of the book.
Oh, I have not
have
at all, like, the
you.
Whole series.
so
tell
no,
me what it said, John.
Well, so basically what it says is, like, it's an anthology series, and so there will be more of it.
Oh, no. I meant this arc.
This arc is like, over. This is the like, end of the arc.
Like, yes. Like this week. Okay.
Yes, I was. This is the end of the arc. But I there will be couldn't, more like that Texas Blood.
I couldn't find any info and, like, just else. I guess I could have read the essay, but, like, I tried to Google it, and Google couldn't tell me whether or not it was the last issue, and the cover didn't say so. So
to be fair, it's like 7 paragraphs in, so I don't blame you for not reading it.
I couldn't, like, I felt like it was the end. I also felt like if for some reason there was one more issue, that would have been, like, that would have been okay. But, like, okay. That was what I needed to know for this week. I enjoyed it.
Does that inform your opinion at all?
No, I mean, like, I thought it was good. Like, I've been enjoying that Texas Blood the whole time, and this issue was a nice little bow on top of everything.
I like that the sheriff gets a cat at the end.
I loved it! Oh, that was my favorite part! Oh, yeah. My heart was so warm in that moment, and so sad for the rest of the issue.
All cops are bastards except this guy. He seems nice.
Yeah.
Which is funny because we liked him at first because we thought he was, like, emotionally unhinged. I was just like, no, the first issue just kind of had to swap it right out.
You know what? We know what we like.
It's funny because it's true.
It is true. That doesn't change the fact that I think the first issue is phenomenal, but yeah.
Was anybody surprised about what's-her-name killing the brother?
Are we surprised? Or
yeah. Was anybody?
Well, I mean, it kind of comes out of nowhere. Well, yeah. I guess it doesn't come out of nowhere. Like, but I feel like the whole time it's been, like, not clear, but it's always tried to be... Like, there's always been doubt about who killed his brother, right? Like,
yeah.
I think that's the point. Like, I think there's, like, it's not necessarily, like, I think that if you go back and read it, it probably would make sense.
Sure.
Like, I think that it, like, when I saw it, I wasn't like, oh, wow, what? But it's definitely, like, not the twist, not a twist I would have expected.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it.
But I feel like it makes sense, too, because... Like, the thing that I think this issue really does is sort of, like, underscore how the book wants you to feel about, what's his name, the main character? I'm so bad at remembering characters' names in this book.
Randy,
which is that he sucks. which is, like, I think the book has sort of, like been leaning in that direction for a while.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of its portrayal of him, but it's, like, this issue especially is, like... Yeah, no, he just, like, convinced himself that he was right, and that, like, you know, what he was doing was, like, you know, he was right in what he was doing, and he deserved to do what he did, and actually, he killed a bunch of people who, I mean, I don't know that they were good people, I don't want
to
go that far.
I mean, they
far,
didn't necessarily have anything to do with what was happening, as far as he knew.
He killed a bunch of people for, like, no reason, at the end of the day. And you know, there's a certain degree of, like, tragedy in that. But also it's clear that he's, like, not the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I do really love that sequence though. Like, it's such a fucking brilliant series of, like, I think 4 or 5 pages, where he walks into the bar and it's, like, it's raining, and the way that the book conveys the rain is, like, being really heavy, just, like, looks really good. The coloring is phenomenal. Like the reds and oranges, the paint dripping, or, like, the I can't tell if it's, like, paint dripping or, like, reflections of, like, neon signs or streetlights or whatever. Either way, it's, like, really effective. It's really moody and atmospheric. And then what is supposed to be a double page spread, but unfortunately reading it digitally is not a double page spread, of, like, the page that's, like, the exterior of the bar and just the 3 blam blam blam.
Oh, that was a great,
is so good. Like, just and then he, like, silently him coming out and sitting down on the curb and just being like, and just losing it is phenomenal. Like, I think, like, if nothing else, even if, like, the first issue from a writing perspective was kind of a happy accident and wasn't actually indicative of, like, what the book turned out to be. And not to say that, like, I have disliked the writing, but if nothing else, the art in this book has been phenomenal from the start.
Oh, for sure.
In terms of, like, setting an atmosphere, it's so fucking good at that. So, gotta give it props for that.
Yeah.
I feel like I like this book a bit. There's a lot of really good stuff. I do feel like it was a little heavy-handed and prosy at times, and I wish certain word bubbles were just gone and there was a bit more, like, quiet blank pages to really sell the moodiness instead of, like, oh, I took a poetry class once. But on the whole, it was really good, and I think this was a fun story. Well, fun in quotes a bit there, but, you know, it was worth reading, and I really enjoyed how it ended, even though the ending was so, like, there, I did it. It's like, oh, actually, you didn't. You just murdered some people, you dickhead. Have fun in prison. And then it was like, here's the ending essay. That's Texas. And I was like, I'm not going to read this. That's a lot of words.
No, that's fair. I do think it's kind of funny that, like, this issue had, like, the last issue has probably some of the least purple prose of
yeah, like, I was like, why weren't all the other issues like this?
Because, like, normally you would expect it in the last issue of, like a lot of writers, like, want to, like, make sure that you know what the character is feeling. But instead, like, and there's a little bit of it on the last couple of pages, but instead it's just, like, this really quiet moment of him in the back of the police car, and then at the end has, like, that sort of, like, crooked smile on his face. Like, it just, like, leaves, it basically, like, leaves it up to the reader to, like, actually interpret, like, what he's thinking, you know? Like, it gives you some context, like, there's some of that purple prose there, but it leaves so much more up to the reader than I think some of the past issues have, which I don't necessarily think, which I agree is, like, a good thing, that there's less of that.
Hey, you know what else we read this week, though, was a Tom King book that had Batman in it and Catwoman and a Joker.
What was it called?
I don't... It was, like, Batman / Catwoman.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
More like Batman / Fuck Off, Please. Tom King thinks he's great, doesn't he?
Well, you know, the part...
Well, lots of people keep telling him he is.
That, too. But then he should listen to the show, because we tell the truth. It's, you know, it's...
It was funny, because he opened on, like, hey, the characters are singing a song, and I was like, Batman Hush did that.
Oh,
did
no.
This, like, four times in your 100-issue run, too.
I'm so sorry that I made you read that book.
No, it's great. It recontextualizes my hate for Tom King. It's now gone up.
Oh, my God. The part where I lost it was before I read it, when Jean-Luc shared the screenshot that was just, like, the Killing Joke, where, like, the last panel of the Killing Joke,
yeah,
where the Batman and Joker are standing, and then there's laughing. Except Tom King is like, oh, except we're gonna show you what happens, and it's the Joker biting Selina. It's really cool.
Hey, guys, you wanna know something that's fucking epic?
What's epic?
What if you wrote, like, a one-shot issue that was, like, a speculative future of, like, what happens to, like, all the Batman characters, and it's, like, really emotional and, like, a great end cap, and it's like, yeah, that's it, there's no more stories to tell, and then you fucking decide in your 12 issue miniseries, damn, what if I told the story of what happened after that?
I
what if I did that?
I
And what if at the same time I mixed in three other stories from three other timelines, and they're all connected?
See,
because I saw Pulp Fiction.
That's the part where I was like, hey, Tom King, fuck off. Actually, the opening on the Christmas Carol, I was like, oh man, fuck off. But then he did the three timelines. I didn't even care that it was the Joker at the end. That's some comic book horse shit. I expect that. Well, everything else...
Well,
it was just too much.
The one part
I
liked about it...
I'm going to read all of this.
Right? Me too.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
And that's the thing. Like, I was talking to Sean earlier in the week, and it's like, well, it's kind of hard. Like, as much as this book is, like, up its own ass, it's also like, how do you read this issue and get, like, a good sense of what this series is going to be and whether it's quality? Like, it's just so all over the place, and it doesn't spend enough time in one place to be like, oh, I care about this. And it's like, yes, it's cool to see Batman and Catwoman kissing, and they kind of fuck, and it's like, yes, this is what we've been waiting for, but, like, not in, like, a one-page thing. I want, like, a, you know...
Well, yeah, they were supposed to fuck in this, and that was apparently a big deal, and it was, like, half a panel, and you didn't...
Well, it's
wasn't
Alfred
the true
them.
Fucking.
And him being like, oh, nice. He went to go bring food, and they're just, you know, doing the kissy kiss.
I want to see Catwoman's pussycat.
Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do.
Thank you, Emily.
Well, you get some great cleavage in this issue if you're into that, I guess. So close.
Chad just pussy. Wanted to say the word pussy.
He did.
Yeah.
And that was a success. True. So, but the big takeaway from this book is that Victoria Belmont, who you guys might know as you know, as that Mask of the Phantasm from the film The Mask of the Phantasm back in the 90s, is in this book, and she's
I didn't know who that was.
She's gonna be there. Yeah. I'm glad you watched the animated movie from the 90s, which is, okay, granted it's a good movie, but it's also like, huh.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a DC comic without a really dumb deep cut that no one cares about anymore.
It's just like
lots of people care about the Mask of the Phantasm.
I love Mask of the Phantasm, but who would read this first issue? And let's say comics weren't a thing where you had to order 3 months in advance. Who would read this first issue and be like, oh boy, I am confident that the second issue will also be good. It's like, what is this?
You know, here's the thing, Alex. Look, I'm going to illustrate your point for you perfectly.
Please do.
I, like, definitely recognize the mask and the name Victoria Bowman. I'm like, damn, that sounds familiar. What the fuck is that? And I didn't realize that it was the Phantasm from The Mask of the Phantasm until you
Jean-Luc
just mentioned it.
Enjoys this book now.
Oh, yeah.
He's like 10 out of 10.
No, I don't. But like, I at least like remember why I'm supposed to know what that is.
I didn't know who Victoria Belmont was until I saw the last page. And I was like, oh, right. That is the name of the girl from that one movie I saw years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, so like the biggest problem with this book is that it's basically the first quarter of four issue ones written by Tom King, and that's not great.
And you know what sucks is most issue ones are terrible, so we get like four times the terrible because we don't get any cohesiveness. It's just like, here's four number ones. You hate number ones? I don't know. Here's some cleavage.
There's a cute cat.
Cute cat. Also, the Joker looks pretty dapper, I gotta say. He's got his, like,
pink
dress
shirt. Did I
tell
you guys last week that in the Hush animated movie, Catwoman has a cat named Eartha?
Eartha Cat.
Yeah. I didn't bring that up, and it's very important that everyone knows this.
I feel like you just redeemed the movie, so that's good.
I don't get it. What's the
Eartha Kitt played Catwoman, and the cat's name is Eartha Cat.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a
play good
on
joke,
words because
John.
At the end of Batman Catwoman, there's a cowl, right? And it's from The Mask of the Phantasm, a movie that you like, John. So you like this comic.
Well, to be fair, I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
Well,
so get
on that, I guess. So yeah, like Chad said, and like Jean-Luc said, and like Emily said, this was not a good issue. But also, I'm going to read all 12 issues, so I don't know.
Yeah, I will say, like, there are some, I have my issues with Tom King as a writer, but I will typically read every weird, dumb thing he puts out if he does a miniseries, because I just want to know what he's going to do. Like, there's enough of him in it and enough, like, interesting ideas where I'm captivated and I want to keep going, where, like, I will drop so many comics after one or two issues that are bad. Unless they're, I guess, like, pretty violent, in which case I'll read all 11 of those and be upset with myself.
Chad, I think you're just a completionist that has nothing to do with Batman or Tom King.
I stopped reading Rat Queens. I did it.
Yeah, how many
after
issues
how many
did
months?
It take you?
Like 12.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing
hey,
to see here.
No. At least five of those were good.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess that's fair.
So
I guess
over half of them were bad.
Yes, and then I
but
stop.
The way comics work is, like, if they alternate good and bad, then you're pulled in, right? Because you get a good issue, and uh-huh. you're like, it's good. Then you get a bad one, and you're like, well, maybe it'll be good, and then it's good, and yeah, you know what?
I don't think it alternated. I think the first arc was good, and then it got bad, like, immediately after that.
Yes.
Oh, okay, well, good thing it didn't alternate, otherwise Chad would still be
also,
reading.
Also, it may have been more like 15 issues.
I think it was, like, over the course of 2 years where you were like...
I think it was over 20.
It was absolutely not that many.
I don't know.
Are you sure?
What's the last issue of Rat Queens? I think that was the where I drew the line.
The last issue of Rat Queens was issue 22.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so maybe I do have a problem.
Maybe a little.
That's okay.
I think I did read like 20 issues of Rat Queens.
We're here for you, Chad. We're here for you. And if you want to talk about Rat Queens at our end of the year show.
No, I don't.
Well, we'll put it on the list for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Won't.
No, it's okay. You don't have to beg. We'll slide it on there. It's good.
I hate you guys sometimes.
Yeah. Let me just do it really quickly. Okay, so right before Red Knight.
Emily, how is Sonic?
Sonic was fine.
Should I add Sonic to the short list?
Yeah, but yes. But in brackets, put only Emily can talk.
Yay!
Well, wait, no, because the metal virus ended this year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, actually, yeah, that was like halfway. Yay, okay. Actually, put everyone can talk. But not everyone has to talk, Sean. It's okay. You don't have
to. Yeah, write all that down. But yeah, Sonic's fine. There's been like an A plot and a B plot, and the A plot had Sonic and Knuckles, or not Sonic and Knuckles, had Sonic and Tails doing shit, and then the B plot had Amy and Rouge doing shit, and then now in this issue, those plots have kind of converged, and Rouge and Tails got kidnapped, and they have to get saved, and there's like a robot, but she's made out of wood, and that's pretty cool. But yeah, Sonic's all right.
Yay! Good for Sonic.
It's very Sonic, and you know what? That's fine. Previous two issues had a lot of Chao racing, and I love that because I love Chao.
Heck yeah!
Nice. I read Marvel's, okay, what is the full fucking title? It has a really stupid title. Okay. It's Marvel's Snapshots Civil War. It's written by Saladin Ackman, which is why I wrote it, who writes the Miles Morales Spider-Man book that I really like. So Marvel's Snapshots, I guess, is like a series of one-shots from, I don't really know. It's like a series of one-shots from different time periods in the Marvel Universe, and this one takes place during the original Civil War. So, like, there's a lot of factors that should indicate that, like, maybe I shouldn't like it. Some other ones that indicate maybe I would like it. But I read it because I saw a few panels from it that he posted on Twitter, and it looked kind of interesting. And it was actually really good. It's basically like a dual narrative of a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who joins S.H.I.E.L.D. because he thinks it's the right thing to do. And during Civil War, and over the course of, and then the other POV character is this like probably like 16 or 17 year old kid who develops superpowers also like right in the lead up to Civil War. So there's like a lot of context that you would need to like really understand like what is going on. But if you have that context, I think this issue is actually really good. It runs into some of the problems that one-shots have where it has to kind of like introduce characters that you aren't familiar with. And so there's like a couple pages with a lot of like kind of like mandatory exposition, I guess. But the story I actually found really compelling, which is basically just like about this S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who realizes like, oh, maybe it's bad that we're locking up superpowered teenagers just for, you know, the fact that they have superpowers and are trying to help. It's like a very sort of like low level superhero story that I really enjoy. I mean, like Captain America shows up at one point, but it's really not like it feels like relatively like low stakes almost, but in a way that like is actually not low stakes in the way that like every event feels like it's low stakes because you know that nothing can really change, but sort of low stakes in the sense that like it's not trying to be like a massive story or anything. It's just trying to tell like this really sort of simple story about these couple characters. And I really liked it. So I wanted to mention it briefly at the end of the show. But I think that's going to do it for us unless anybody has anything else.
I started reading the other history of the DC Universe, which is a I think it was announced right when Black Label was announced. It was one of the first sort of things that was going on, but it's like a written by John Ridley. I think it's a screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave. And yeah. It's the first issue's, but it's really like a novella. Like, it's a novella with, like, imagery as opposed to a comic book. So I made it through, like, 10 pages in, like, 20 minutes. So I'll report next week. I mean, it's so far, it is like a history of the universe from, like, his perspective kind of thing. And it's sort of interesting so far, but we'll see.
Sounds good. Maybe. We will look forward to that reporting, I suppose. All right, cool. Well, I guess we can wrap it up there just around the hour mark.
I'm impressed. I mean, I guess we haven't hit the hour mark yet, but normally Chad is the one who says we should wrap up an episode, but Jean-Luc took the initiative. And I guess now that I'm talking about it, kind of defeats the purpose, but...
I mean, I'm editing this week, but also, like, there weren't that many comics that came out, so usually we would have, like, a few more books to talk about at this point. And we don't, so...
True.
But I asked...
really light, honestly.
Yeah. But I asked if other people had things they wanted to talk about, and nobody said anything, so I just assumed I was fine to end the episode.
So that Juggalo I know that I met at the Insane Clown Posse concert put out an album this year.
Yeah?
And nice. His music can be hit or miss, but this one's actually pretty solid. There's like 20 tracks. I would say like 15 of them are probably worth listening to, and he's selling it for $5. So, you know, like that to me evens out pretty well. Like, I'm in the process of trying to, like, hey, how do I buy this since it's not on your Bandcamp yet, you bastard? I would, you know, go to Open Minded on Facebook if you want to listen to some weird, like, hip-hop stuff. He does a lot of collabs with his friends and, like, other local hip-hop and rap artists within, like, the Minnesota area. And I think it's worth a listen. He's on Spotify, too, so you should check that out.
Yay!
Cool.
Nice!
It's under M-I-K-I-L-L-I. The new actual Open-Minded album is not good. Well, that came out last year is really good. He's a mixed bag. But this one is solid, so I do recommend it.
Yeah. He's a mixed bag, but you know who isn't a mixed bag? Chad Waller. And you can buy his new short story collection, Dreamscape, on Amazon.com right now. You can buy the Kindle version or the physical version.
Okay. Right now. Okay, one sec.
If you want to. And then you can go to his... Well, I guess you don't really need to go to his blog, anonym.wordpress.com, because you can just fucking buy the book that has the updated versions of the short stories and then the better versions. The versions 2.0. And you can also go to anonym.bandcamp.com to listen to his music and buy his game, The Land of Glass, on Steam. It's not on sale anymore, but if you miss it in the Steam sale, you can still buy it for full price.
It'll be on Steam sale again in like 20 days because Christmas.
I don't know why we have... That's stupid that we have like... There's a Steam sale every month now.
Yep.
So, anyway, you can also follow him on Twitter at AnonymBand or at DualWieldSoft. And then you can follow Emily at MPandanata on Twitter. And you can listen to her other podcasts, Imagine Me in Yurikuma, which is an anime podcast, as I understand it.
Yes.
And Fresh Podcast Market, which is also an anime podcast.
Shut up!
So you can listen to one of the two anime, one or both of the two anime podcasts that Emily does, and then you can follow Alex on Twitter at AlexAnziak, and you can listen to his other podcast, CGM Flashbacks. I remembered the name this time. And you can, I guess, follow like the Roller Coaster Tycoon accounts or some shit. He does stuff
big for news.
Them.
I'm taking over the main account starting on the 21st.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
So I'll be full roller coaster.
Oh, cool. I get to troll all the Roller Coaster Tycoon accounts.
Yeah,
you
get your choice now, so it's very exciting.
I actually haven't done that in a while.
You did message
me. Is the phone game free?
Yeah.
I wonder if I should download that and play it and hate it so I can actually like have context for what I'm messaging
feel free,
you.
Yeah. live your life, Chad. However you'd like to.
I'm not.
Also,
do that.
I just bought
like
Chad's
work.
Book live on the podcast, so you can too. Listening right now.
Nice.
Go for it.
You can also go to cgmagonline.com. Are you still reviewing that shitty next-gen PS4 game?
My Godfall review will be up on Monday, so by the time the show should be up by then. But it's okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's like, there's like...
Quality feedback.
The bosses are really cool. It's great. And there's like five big bosses in the game, and they show you them at the beginning. But then they spend 15 hours, like, making you fight guys before you can get to these bosses, and it's like... Okay, you gotta unlock this door, but first you gotta walk 900 meters, and it's like, oh god. So,
yeah. And even if you don't like it, you're a dishonest games journalist that they paid you for a review, so you can't give it lower than a 7.5.
I made 10 grand for this review, guys. Like,
Jesus, geez. Good for you, man.
Yeah, that's why I bought.
Like, you're out there.
You know what?
Hustling,
I'm gonna buy
good
six
job.
Copies of Chad's book. Let's
Yeah.
Yay!
You should too.
Give them to your friends.
Yes. And your enemies. Actually. Enemies can read too. All right, it's fine. All Merry right. Christmas.
Well,
everyone.
Thank you all for listening, and we will see you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.